Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we explore ideas and strategies. I sometimes share blueprints and practical resources, but I also tell stories and share some of my big epic mistakes that I have made along the way in this journey myself as an educator toward empowering my students with voice and choice. And today we're going to be talking about the end of the year. We're only going to tiptoe toward this idea of creativity in the classroom because I think it's important that we think about what we will take away from this year. This has been a really challenging year. And so I want us to think about a few different realities. In fact, I have kind of shared in this particular podcast three big realities. And then what our takeaways are and how we move forward. And this is one of those podcasts that's, you know, honestly, as much for me getting a chance to process this stuff as it is for, you know, anyone who's listening. So I'm going to share first a story, and then from there we'll get into these realities of this particular school year that has been in many ways really, really hard. So nothing about this evening fit the description of a dance recital. Not the parking lot or the lawn chairs or the sound of cars whizzing past. I sat in jeans and a sweatshirt, hardly the kind of outfit I would normally wear to a dance recital. And I was eating a slice of pizza off of a thin paper plate, you know, the kind where the plate itself just seems to absorb all of the grease at the bottom. And I just enjoyed hanging out with my wife and my kids as they told stories and cracked jokes, and it was fun. Now, the show was supposed to start at 8:30, but we were a solid half hour early, and then we had to wait another hour or so until it would be dark enough to watch the pre-recorded video. Now, quick confession here. I had really low expectations of this video. Don't get me wrong. I would be a proud dad, and I would be super proud of the way my daughter worked, how hard she worked, you know, the number of hours she had put in the last 6 months in dance. But I had watched the recordings of recitals in the past, and they always lacked the emotional intensity of live theater. There was no way that this could match the energy of watching my daughter dance at the historic Elsinore Theater surrounded by a live audience. Now, eventually they began the program. Each dancer received an award, and I know that there are folks who rail against this whole everybody gets a trophy thing, but honestly, if there's a year where everyone deserves a trophy, it's this year. We all deserve a trophy, every single one of us, for just making it through this year. And then as the sky grew darker and darker, I braced against the cold breeze. The head of the studio turned on the projector, and immediately, I was mesmerized. The multiple cameras captured the minimalist studio with its stark lighting and stripped-down set. The required social distance pushed the choreography in a new direction. The use of masks seemed to emphasize each dancer's eyes rather than limiting their facial expressions. Powerful themes emerged of isolation and suffering and trauma and hope and community and movement, each one told beautifully with the human body and with music. My eyes got a little weepy and watery when I saw a close-up of my daughter. I could see the determination and the hard work mixed with the sheer joy she experiences when she does ballet. The truth is that dance has been a bright spot in a really challenging year. And although she seemed at school to have it all put together, I knew that in so many ways she was breaking inside during this year. Now, this video recital exceeded my expectations. I had imagined a single camera recording a socially distanced group of dancers in a smaller dance studio, and I assumed it would look like watching a video recording of a dress rehearsal. In other words, I had focused entirely on what students could not do. They couldn't use a stage. They couldn't be physically close. They couldn't dance live. They couldn't have the same type of set that they would normally have. I focused on how they would translate a live performance to video, and I knew that something would be lost in translation. But they didn't translate it. They focused instead on how they would transform the whole concept of a recital by emphasizing what video can do when it's at its best. Multiple camera angles, close-ups, capturing facial expressions. In other words, the limitations led to creative constraints, and that led to innovation. Now, I wouldn't call this an opportunity. I don't want to be positive about the pandemic. This reality doesn't diminish how hard this year has been. The trauma and the suffering have been immense. But there is this other reality, which is simply that this has been a year of innovation born out of necessity. And it has me thinking about the complex and nuanced realities of teaching during this pandemic year. I want us to think about what we will take away from this year through three different realities. So, reality number one, the trauma is real. Teachers are tired right now, but part of what they are experiencing is something far deeper. This year has been traumatic. Some teachers have lost loved ones due to COVID-19. Others have faced health issues or financial hardships. Everyone has experienced the psychological effects of social isolation, but it has hit certain people harder than others. We have all experienced varying levels of secondary trauma and secondhand trauma as we work with students and staff and families who have lost their jobs or their homes during this pandemic, or in some cases, who have lost loved ones. Teachers have often been the ones sitting with students as they grieve the loss of an uncle or a grandparent, or in some cases, even a parent or guardian, and they will never see them again. They've heard the stories of abuse that certain students have experienced when life became harder and more chaotic at home. And this happened amid their own personal trauma that they were experiencing. On a more basic day-to-day level, teachers have faced constant challenges. It's been frustrating to hop onto a Zoom call only to speak into the black void of turned-off cameras and muted microphones. It has felt overwhelming to teach in a hybrid class with half the students at home and the other half in the room. Teachers have worked extra hard at building relationships and checking in with students only to have low attendance and even lower work completion rates. They faced a barrage of emails, sometimes not written in the most polite way, from concerned and even angry parents and guardians, all the while telling their students 75 times a day to just put the mask over your nose. Instructional coaches and school administrators have had similar experiences, from increasing discipline issues to frustrated teachers to demanding parents. And they've had to navigate this ever-changing landscape of new policies and mandates on an ongoing basis, all the while feeling like you're just not doing enough, like the year is just getting ahead of them and they're falling behind and they don't know where to go or where to turn. Again, this has been a hard year. Teachers are feeling exhausted. The typical teacher tired of late May or early June hit hard way back in like January or February. And this year has been a marathon. And at the end of the marathon, there are different levels of tired. Some teachers are simply exhausted. They've crossed the finish line and they are placing their hands over their head with a mix of gratitude that it's over and a sense of pride over facing a huge challenge. These teachers are worn out and they need deep rest. But other teachers, they're not just tired, they're injured. These teachers have finished the marathon, but they are hurting right now. Some have been traumatized, and they need more than just rest. They need healing. They might need to go talk to a counselor. They might need professional help. And truly, that is a sign of strength when you can go get that help that you need. I just want to say this right now and say it pretty boldly. I am a huge fan of counseling. I am a huge fan of getting the help that you need. So with that in mind, I just want to point out that years ago, I created this continuum for myself. I'd had the hardest year ever. It was the only year in 12 years of teaching that I had a really challenging principal, someone who was just toxic in leadership, who was leading from a place of insecurity instead of strength. I think 17 teachers either quit or left the school before the end of the year. It was a big exodus. It was really hard. And I realized I needed something more than just rest. I needed rehabilitation. I needed to be, to process and to heal and to talk to a counselor and to really think through it. So with that in mind, I made this continuum for myself where on one hand you have tired and then on the other hand you have injured. So on the left-hand side, you have rest. This is where you say, I need a break. That's all it is. Just, I need a break. And then I'm ready to learn. I might do some professional development over the summer. I might try some new things. I might do some planning. But let me rest a little bit first. And then you have recovery. This is where you say, I need rest, yes, but I am a little bit injured. I need to recover before I hit that place of true injury. I need a longer break. I need deeper processing. I might need a longer vacation, some time with family. And I need to take some time to process this year, to make sense out of this year. I might still do some professional development at some point, but it's not going to be as much as if I had just been rested. But then there's the teacher who needs restoration. This is where you say, something was taken from me this year. And I need to process things deeply. I need to make sense out of this year, just like I would from a place of recovering. But I need to be restored. I need to be reassured that some things are going to change, that the culture is going to change. I need to get a sense of what the new normal is going to be. And restoration says, I want to recover some of what I lost. This is where you look for some inspiration over the course of the summer. You look to find that spark again that was gone. And you take some deep time to rest and process. And you really say, you know, professional development might be on hold this summer. I might not engage in a lot of PD because I just need to recover. And I just need to feel that deeper sense of restoration. For some people, it's deeply spiritual, right? And so they'll connect to a faith community. They might meditate and engage in, you know, mindfulness, whatever it may be. They're saying, I need that restoration. But then there's that place of true rehabilitation. You're saying, I need more than just rest. I need to not spend the summer learning. I'm hurting right now. I need healing. I need therapy to cover from this year. Again, this person might see a counselor. They might join a support group. They might do a mastermind group that they lead. And yeah, they might engage in some professional learning, but they're giving themselves the permission to not do that right now. They just need to focus on truly rehabilitating. And again, if we think about athletes when they get injured, sometimes, you know, an athlete will just get rest. You know, they played a game and they're tired. They need rest. They need a few days off and then they're ready to go. But others need to go to rehab. They need to have physical therapy. They need to spend some time doing some exercises that take care of their body. And I think the same thing is true of us on a social level, on an emotional level, perhaps even on a spiritual level. And that's where you say, that's what I need right now. And so that is reality number one. The trauma is real, and we need to recognize that. Reality number two, which relates to this, is that it's okay to want normalcy again. A good friend of mine, and we'll call her Alex because I want to kind of keep it anonymous, said, I don't ever want to hear the word pivot again, like ever. Now, she is a phenomenal, innovative teacher. She's constantly iterating and, yes, pivoting on a regular basis. That's what she does. She experiments and tries new things. However, she quickly grew tired of constantly changing policies and expectations. Virtual learning followed by hybrid and then back to virtual and then a new asynchronous, synchronous blended version of hybrid and then virtual again and then fully in person but with masks and 6 feet distance and no recess and kids can't go anywhere and you can't use any of the same strategies that you're used to. Now, what she was experiencing was change fatigue, and this was because of the shifting policies and initiatives and decisions that seemed to stream by and change on a weekly, if not daily, basis. She experienced the mix of apathy and passive resignation and anger that often accompanies change fatigue. And it's because these mandates seem to be random and unfocused. Now, Alex doesn't blame her leadership. She recognizes that these changes are a complicated mix of district level and state level policies, and it's just the reality of being in a pandemic. It's kind of no one's fault on some level. Alex is ready to return to normal. After feeling alone and isolated in a hybrid environment, she has found community again in co-planning with her colleagues. But even so, she is still yearning for the meaningful face-to-face Socratic seminars and hands-on maker projects that she's used to doing. She's ready to greet students at the door with a smile and a fist bump. On a deeply personal level, she wants to feel like an expert again. For her, the whole year has been chaotic, and she's ready to just lean into her expertise and wisdom that she has gained in over 20 years of teaching fifth grade. And I think that's okay. It's okay to embrace the return to normalcy. There's nothing wrong with saying, I miss what I had. I'm feeling a sense of loss and I can't wait to do the things I used to do. The truth is, great things are happening every day in school. We don't have to change everything. And I think for this reason, we should be celebrating this reality. But then there is a third reality. The third reality is this: we can redefine the new normal. One of the most common things that I heard from teachers this year was, I feel like a new teacher all over again. Most of us experience some level of disequilibrium and disorientation. But the truth is that we are new teachers. We became new teachers this year. And that's because we gained new skills and discovered new practices, and we will not be the same next year. For some, the learning curve was largely technology-focused. They found new ways to leverage the connective and creative capacity of technology. Their students engaged in meaningful projects using shared documents and video conferencing for collaboration, and they used tools like Trello for project management. And that's awesome. They learned all of these fantastic technology skills. They started with the question, what does anytime, anywhere learning look like? And they reimagined aspects of their curriculum. For other teachers, the learning curve had more to do with social-emotional learning and the need to address things like soft skill development. They were already experts in blended learning and virtual learning even, but this year was a chance to focus on SEL, and they had a big learning curve. Still, others began to explore trauma-sensitive and trauma-informed pedagogy. This was a chance to think through what students were actually going through and how to craft lessons in a way that recognized the trauma that students experienced. For others, the pandemic brought to light systemic injustice, and these teachers will be exploring how to make learning more just and equitable through a lens of critical race theory, or through making learning more culturally responsive. We have all experienced a significant learning curve this year. And in this process, we've become different. If we think about the hero's journey, teachers have gone through an epic experience, and they are now returning with that elixir, right? Those new skills, mindsets, and understandings. Returning home is going to look different. we will have the opportunity to reimagine and redesign learning for our students. Again, we can redefine the new normal. So how do we move forward? I think it's important that teachers feel the permission to embrace normalcy. I know that people have said things like, it would be a shame if we go through the pandemic and fail to use this as a chance to transform education. But actually, not everything needs to be transformed. There are great strategies that are timeless and vintage. We don't need to blow up the system and invent something new. If we do that, we run the risk of futurism, where we push toward the latest and greatest only to find that we've mistaken novelty for innovation. When we rush toward the next best thing, we run the risk of accepting every new fad rather than focusing on sustainable change. This is why I think it's important that we define relevance not as flashy and new, but as different and better. At the same time, we also need to recognize that our return to normal will not be the same as what teaching looked like 2 years ago. The context has changed. We have changed. We have all learned all kinds of new things. This is why I think it's important that we take a vintage innovation approach where we have that overlap between best practices and next practices. Now, there are a few things that we can take with us from this year and a few things that we can look forward to in the future. And that's the exciting part for me. I'll tell you what, for me personally, I'm all about things that I learned this year. For example, showing students more grace and really paying attention to how they're doing. Paying a deeper attention to UX design principles. Bringing the world into my classroom and using things like video conferencing on a regular basis. Integrating technology into the blended classroom in a more effective way where we really use both synchronous and asynchronous tools. Focusing on the things that matter most, the relationships, the soft skills, and prioritizing that in our curriculum rather than just learning content. Those are things that were emphasized this year that I want to bring into next year. At the same time, there are things I'm looking forward to when we go back to face-to-face. I'm looking forward to body language and facial expressions. I'm looking forward to incorporating movement and really thinking through the physical space. I'm looking forward to the interactive discussions and Socratic seminars and things like that. I'm looking forward to goofing off in those little spaces that we have in between classes, those breaks that we have in the four-hour classes I teach. Those times students show up early and we just hang out and exist as people together. I miss that. And I'm looking forward to having that again. My hope is that I can find that overlap between the best practices and the next practices. I want to celebrate the normal and never take for granted the power of physical presence and body language and facial expressions. But I also want to innovate in my practice and continue to try new things. I want to return to normal, but I also want to redefine that new normal. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this, will you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and a fantastic summer, and just go out and make something awesome.